Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. Water infrastructure issues are much in the news in the U.S., not only in the West, where the continuing drought is taking a high toll, but also in other parts of the country where the water needs of municipalities, utilities, commercial interests, and agriculture intersect and sometimes conflict. In today's interview, one in a series of three that provide an overview of some of the nation's water challenges, we're speaking with Robert Glennon, who's Regents Professor and Morris K. Udall Professor of Law and Public Policy at the University of Arizona. He's an expert on water policy, and he'll talk to us about the trade-off between water needs of residential water users and those of energy production. In 2009, Professor Glennon published Unquenchable, America's Water Crisis and What to Do About It, a book that describes some of these problems. Robert, thanks for talking with us today.
Good to be with you, Joe.
Please tell us something about this intersection between the use of water in, for energy production and for what I'll call potable purposes. I think we know something about the water that comes out of the tap. We don't often think about it used in energy production.
Right. Well, it's very much a two-way street, a nexus between water and energy, Joe. On the one hand, it takes a heck of a lot of water to produce most types of energy. And conversely, it takes a heck of a lot of energy to move, pump, cleanse, and deliver and treat water.
So does it make a difference how we produce that energy, for example, the fuel source?
Sure, it absolutely does. The amount of water needed for energy production varies dramatically. If you take, for example, hydroelectric power, that uses virtually no water, just the evaporation behind the dam. Or similarly, solar photovoltaic cells that we see on rooftops, they're very low water use and occasional washing of the mirrors. On the other end of the spectrum, I would point my finger at ethanol production for fuel, which is a real water guzzler in the process. It takes as much as 4 gallons of water to refine 1 gallon of ethanol. But first, you have to grow the corn. And if you're talking about the American West, where farmers irrigate, it can take as much as 2,500 gallons of water to grow enough corn to refine 1 gallon of ethanol.
So is this a trade-off problem acute across the country, in the Midwest, or in your part of the country? Does it vary?
Oh, it varies dramatically, and particularly in the southeastern part of the United States, energy production diverts more water than any other use, but it doesn't consume a very large percentage of water. In fact, Joe, that's true nationwide. The biggest consumer of water nationwide is irrigation by farmers, but the biggest diverter of water is for power production. But it's generally a single use. That is, in Georgia, for example, you take water out of a nearby river, you run it through the power plant for cooling purposes, and then you put the water, slightly elevated in temperature, back into the river. So you've more borrowed the water than consumed the water.
So it's not a consumptive use. Yeah, it's essentially recycled and basically untouched except for temperature.
Correct.
So a lot of your work, as I understand it, focuses on the allocation of water for purposes beyond potable water applications, particularly in situations of scarcity. Is this a general problem common across the United States? Is it common in other countries? Are some places doing a better job of managing this than others?
Of water generally or reusing water?
Well, both. In a sense, you've got competing uses for this scarce product.
Oh, absolutely you do. And we doled out water rights to it at a time when water seemed to be abundant. And the consequence is that there are a lot of uses today that are very inefficient. I think one of the big challenges for us is how are we going to move inefficient uses to become more efficient?
That's an interesting historical note that I guess we're stuck with right now. That is, water rights, at least in some parts of the country, were allocated. And now the question is, can we reallocate?
Not easily, because these are property rights in most Western states. And so you really need to figure out some way to incentivize those who hold the water to use less. And we can do that. I've been pushing very hard for using market forces to reallocate water. And I put it this way, Joe. So if someone wants water for a new demand, whatever that demand may be, it's the equivalent of putting another straw into the milkshake glass. And I think we should have a demand offset system that says to that person who wants to put a new demand on the public resource, if you want to do so, you need to persuade someone else to use less water. You need to persuade someone else to take her straw out of the glass so that you don't make the situation worse.
So are we really talking about pricing?
Pricing is part of it, but independent of pricing is simply trading of water rights. And I've been doing some work on this, did a report for the Brookings Institution last year called Shopping for Water with a fellow lawyer friend and an economist about how we could use market forces to address the water crisis in the American West. And a good illustration of that would be a dry year lease. So let's use some principles of resiliency and risk mitigation from the business world in the world of water. So a farmer who is desperate to water his orchard might buy the annual water use of, say, a broccoli grower. Or it could be a city that pays the broccoli grower not to grow that season. And the broccoli grower makes out by getting basically an insurance premium. And then if the option is exercised, the broccoli grower would be paid more than the broccoli grower could get if he grew broccoli. So it's a kind of win-win situation.
Would it be fair to describe this as creating secondary markets so that you trade whatever there is to trade in order for people to feel that they come out whole?
Yes. And we need to do so in a sensitive way to rural communities, because let's be clear about this. The water is going to come from farmers using less precisely because they use so much. In most Western states, Joe, that's about 80% of the water is consumed by farmers. But the cities don't need all that much water. And the data I have suggests that a low single-digit reduction in agricultural consumption would solve the municipal and industrial supply problem. And so if we set up a system that had the infrastructure for irrigation modernized by monies provided by the municipal and industrial sectors, that would leave rural communities in excellent shape. Farmers grow the same amount of product as before, but with slightly less water.
So I think what you're talking about is really changing the technology at the level of the farm to be more efficient.
Right now, Joe, at least half of all acres in the American West are flood irrigated, which is stunning to behold, but that's the truth. So we could use city money to move from flood irrigation to center pivots or to micro or drip irrigation. There's some very interesting stuff going on in the world of farm irrigation.
So my understanding is some of these technologies you're talking about are not new. Drip irrigation is probably newer, but this center pivot concept is something that if anybody that flies across the Midwest and the Western United States sees these green circles, they really are the artifact of that.
Absolutely true. The drip irrigation itself has been around for a bit. It was pioneered by an Israeli company called Netafim, but they've got a toehold now in the American West, and I visited one of their plants and seen their operation, and I'll tell you, it's very exciting.
So it allows farmers to achieve what they were achieving before, but do it more efficiently.
Right. And that's essential. I mean, we need to protect vibrant communities of rural America.
So who's in charge here? Is there a decision authority involved, or is it a matter of a variety of separate negotiations?
Oh, boy, that's a great question. And unfortunately, it's really complicated. Mostly, water law is state-based. But there's an overlay of federal laws, mostly federal environmental statutes, you know, the Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, things like that, that affect how people use water within the states. And as we show in this recent report, Shopping for Water, there are a lot of impediments that exist in water laws that prevent the market from really taking hold. Just to give you one quick example, Joe, in some states, if a farmer uses less water, the farmer doesn't get to keep the water. The farmer actually loses the right to the water on the theory that he was wasting it. Well, my goodness, that's absolutely idiotic. What we need to be doing is encouraging people to use less, not more.
Yes, what it seemed like in a case like that, the logical path would be to provide some kind of compensation or reward for using less water.
Correct. And that's what this market system that I'm talking about would do. But let's see if we can talk about price, because you mentioned that, and I want to circle back on that. Because as I go around talking to groups, I have met so many engineers and inventors who have built better water mousetraps. They have technologies that will definitely save water. And yet most of these technologies remain sitting on the laboratory shelf because the price of water is just too darn low. Almost none of these inventors have a viable business plan because there's just no return on their investment with the price as low as it is.
So if the price changes, maybe you bring some of those technologies into the marketplace.
Absolutely you would. I mean, if you think about it, we Americans are spoiled. We just take water as though it were the air. We pay less, Joe, for water than we do for cell phone service or for cable television. Most of us never think about water.
That's certainly true in my household, looking at prices of cable. So where's the debate going on about this? Who's bringing this beyond you, or how are you bringing this to the surface so people are talking about creating what sounds like a different water economy?
Oh, I think there's a lot of discussions going on across the country. I've talked to the White House National Economic Council, to the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology. There's a new program being developed at the U.S. Department of the Interior Bureau of Reclamation on trading water. You're seeing this start to take hold. The pricing signal issue is a little more delicate because it really is a political issue, and elected officials don't want to get out in front on the idea of raising water rates. But you know what, Joe? They're going to have to anyway. And here's the sort of sad part of that. As we've watched this year, California struggle with drought, we've seen Californians use a lot less water. But using a lot less water is now translating into an enormous nightmare for the water utilities, because water rates are set to be revenue neutral. That is, to have the monies that ratepayers pay be equivalent to the amount of money it costs the utility to provide the water. But with less water going out the door, the revenues are declining, which is going to have to result in a rate increase. And boy, is that going to be politically dicey. Here you've begged your consumers to use less. They do so, and then you turn around and slap them with a rate increase.
It strikes me it's not only that you need to raise the rates because the revenues are less, but presumably some of these water utilities need to make investments to make a change in supply.
Oh, you are so on the money on that. I mean, as you know so well, the infrastructure in the United States is in a terrible state of disrepair, and that is surely true with both water plants, wastewater treatment facilities. Best estimates are we probably need $1 trillion investment to bring them up to speed, and I don't know where that money is going to come from. I'm thinking it's going to have to come from private-public partnerships, because the history of water infrastructure in the United States is essentially, with the 1972 Clean Water Act, Congress paid local municipalities to put in treatment plants. Then in the 80s, there was a revolving fund, but now that federal spigot of funds has dried up, and cash-strapped cities and towns are looking around for how do they fix their decaying infrastructure, and it's not a pretty picture.
It isn't, and it sounds like what you're talking about, and the idea that creating a very different economy for the allocation of water has got to be on the path forward.
I think so.
Robert, thank you very much for bringing these insights to us. I really appreciate your spending the time with us.
Oh, it was great to chat with you, Joe.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Bye.